Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the PCA Podcast. In this episode, we're going to speak with Manny Albin on the art of autocross. Manny knows everything there is to know about autocross. He's been doing it for a lot of years, and he's the man with all the answers. He's not only going to talk about autocross, but he's also going to touch on the junior program for 16 and 17-year-olds, which he's going to sign his kids up for. It really helps them get ready to be safe on the road, and it's a great program offered by PCA. So let's go on over and talk to Manny.
Hi, Anthony.
Hey, you guys from the PCA are great. What is it? How do I prepare? And can I be competitive with a stock Porsche? Just talk to me like I'm a, new member. Just showed up in my first autocross, or I showed up to my first event and want to know what an autocross is.
Well, an autocross, the name itself really doesn't lend itself to what the event is. An autocross is normally held on an empty parking lot with a bunch of pylons that form a course, and you navigate your car through this course at speed, and you're timed. You're doing it by yourself, so there's no other cars that'll be passing you, or you'll be catching up to them. You're solo out there. The worst you'll probably do is either hit a pylon, which is a traffic plastic rubbery pylons that don't do any damage, or you'll spin out, and when you spin out, you usually just spin out and hit nothing and create some smoke and get some applause and have your heart rate go up a little bit. But that's the fun part about autocrossing, is that you can learn how to control your car and learn the limits in a controlled environment without finding out what it's like to spin your car on the highway. So in itself, autocross is a learning tool as well as a competitive event. Most autocrosses are open to Porsches and non-Porsches, depending on the region. The neat thing about autocross as opposed to a driver's ed or even club racing is all you really need is a helmet. And even the helmets themselves sometimes are, they have rental helmets at the autocross sites. Other than that, you just show up your car. They do a basic tech on the car, which means they'll check to make sure that your wheels aren't going to fall off, that you don't have anything loose in the trunk or inside the interior of the car. And when you get there, you'll see people removing spare tires or coffee cups or things like that from the car. So tech is pretty easy to get through. You'll pay your registration fee. That can run anywhere from $10 to $40, depending on who's running the autocross. And normally, and this is important for first-timers, is they'll always offer instructors to run with you. While looking at an autocross, it looks pretty easy to run. When you get out there, if you lose concentration, it can appear to be a sea of pylons. So an instructor will help guide you through the course and reinforce your comfort level with the event in itself, because you're paying to have fun, so we want to make sure that you're having fun, not being stressed out. When you get there, when you're preparing for the autocross, they tell you ahead of time that to make it more enjoyable is to prepare some things before you come out to the autocross. It's good to have a bring a folding chair, sunscreen, something to drink, maybe something to eat. Sometimes it's good to bring a tarp or a bag to put your belongings in, just in case the weather turns bad and it starts to rain. Normally they run this rain or shine, so it's up to you to make sure your things don't get wet while you're at the autocross. After you've brought all this stuff to the prepared to bring all this stuff to the autocross, it's good to look ahead on the website to see what time the registration opens, what time tech opens. Normally, all this stuff is available either on registration or online at the registration site or at on the newsletter. Once you arrive at the site, look for tech, look for registration. Normally, there'll be people from the region helping you guide to where you can park, where you can unload your things and whatnot. After you've taken your car for tech and after you're registered, you can usually walk the course, although they'll make an announcement that the course is open for walkthrough. Some regions have an official walkthrough where the chief instructor will give the participants a walkthrough. I've been autocrossing since 1989, and I always tell rookies or newbies to stand back to the end of the line and wait and give the people in front of you about a good 40 to 50 feet head start and then start walking. And the walking part is the key to success in autocrossing and making your experience a lot more pleasurable because you have to be able to know where the course is in order to get a complete timed run. A lot of times rookies don't know the course or haven't walked the course or haven't learned it, and they get lost, and that's called a DNF or did not finish or an off course, so you don't get a time for that. So I always tell them that you always want to make sure that you get a clean time run before you before anything at all. So if you don't get clustered in a whole group of people doing the walk, but make sure that no one's in front of you, and you walk it much the way you're going to drive it, which means if you're going to be on the right-hand side of the cone, then you want to be walking on the right-hand side. You want to be looking ahead. You want to be looking the pavement to see if it changes, to see if it's angled, if there's a change in pavement as far as elevation in the parking lot and whatnot. All these things you have to be looking at. And it's also a good idea to walk the course more than once. Even though I've been doing it since 1989, it's not uncommon for me to walk it 2 to 3 times just to make sure in my head that I understand where the course is going. Mm. Of course, more importantly, if I'm teaching a student, to make sure the student doesn't get lost as well. Once you walk the course, you'll be given a registration. You'll be given a run group. Usually they divide it to 1, 2, or 3 heats, they're called. And each heat can be anywhere from a few cars up to 25, 30 cars in the heat. And you will run whatever heat number they tell you to run in. And normally you get anywhere from 3 to 5 to 6 runs. Now, that doesn't sound like much when the run may be a minute in itself, but it's going to be the most exhilarating minute you're going to have all day, I guarantee it. It's much like downhill skiing. It's a sport that rewards precision, and there's very little room for error. Although everybody makes it, and that's what differentiates the winners from those finishing 2nd, 3rd, 4th, and 5th. And once again, riding with your instructor will make your experience a lot more pleasurable because the instructor will give you tips on how to stay on course, how to drive the course, when to brake, when to accelerate, so on and so forth. Each region has its own what they call classing system. This is where the neat part about just having a Porsche and coming out to the event is good enough. They have stock classes, which basically means you run what you've run. You just show up, and if your car's stock, you're going to be probably paired against equal cars that are equal in performance. Boxers usually run with boxers, 944 turbos or 944 turbos and whatnot. Sometimes they combine them depending on how many people show up to the event. But the odds are if you show up with a 914, you won't be running against a 911 turbo. That's a almost a guarantee. And the neat thing, though, is if you have made modifications to your car, you know, they let you run with the equal cars that have been equally modified as well. It's a place for everyone to run at the autocross. Unlike a track event or club racing, where horsepower is a huge advantage, in autocross it falls more on the driver. So it's not uncommon to see a 914 or normally aspirated 944 have a better run time than a 911 turbo or a GT3. It's a lot depending on the driver and the driver's ability and the experience. It's not all about the horsepower or big brakes or big wings. And there's always a class for any car that Porsche built. Check your region's website or newsletter for exact classing. Good to know the stuff before you get there, so when they ask you what class you're running, you're not stumbling to figure out where what modifications you might have made and where your car is going to be.
Manny, what are some of the things one can do right off the bat to improve performance in an autocross?
Tires is probably one of the biggest investments, best bang for the buck investments you can make for your car in autocrossing. They have what's called R-compound tires, and several manufacturers make them. You can go to a different online website and see you know, the prices and what sizes they have. R-compound normally means that the tire is, believe it or not, DOT approved. It's street legal. All the amount of tread varies, and I certainly would recommend driving these tires necessarily in the rain. Some people bring them and switch them when they come over. Some people tow. Myself, I make sure that it's a nice and sunny day when I go out, and it's going to stay that way, so I'm not driving home in the rain. But when otherwise, I'll change my plans or just bring the tires with me and switch them when I get there. But the tires, the R-compound tires, are in between street tires and what they call racing slicks that are going to react to heat very well, and they're going to become stickier. Consequently, they're not going to last as long as a street tire, and they're going to behave a little bit differently when they're cold versus a street tire. So normally I recommend for rookies or newcomers to just run on your street tires. Run what you're used to driving on And then as you get better and you can understand the difference, that's when you start stepping up to our compound tires. Going back to the course walk, some terminology that you're going to hear when you're walking the course is made up of what's called gates, which is basically two pylons that you're going to go through. Once again, going back to downhill skiing analogy, where they have lags, this is the pylons form a gate, and the gates are going to be what you're going to go through. You may run into what's called a slalom, which is single cones that you have to thread your way in and out. Some of them are going to have what's called a pointer cone. That's going to be a cone that's lying down that's telling you which direction to enter the slalom. If it doesn't have a pointer cone, that's what they call optional, which means you can go in left or right. Where it becomes tricky and an advantage to an experienced autocrosser to look and see which one is the best way to enter, left or right. And if you're a rookie, it's best to, like I said, pick up an instructor, pick up a veteran, and walk with them and ask them what they think is the best way to go into the slalom. They will also have a stop garage, which is basically a whole series of cones where you come to the end of the course and you have to usually come to a complete stop. Where once your car crosses these timing lights, you essentially hit the brakes and slow down because you're no longer being timed. Some regions at the start will have a what they call a rolling start. So instead of a drag race start where you're going to use up your clutch and wear down your axles, they start you off at an angle, thus saving the wear and tear on your car.
What kind of wear and tear can I expect?
Also, speaking about the wear and tear, it's very minimal. You'll have some tire wear, but other than tire wear and using up some gasoline, there isn't a whole lot of wear and tear during autocross. The run itself is done in about 1 minute. Usually the course is run. You'll see second gear, maybe third gear. That's about it. At least a good autocross shouldn't go anymore. Past third gear. It's not about speed so much as precision. The other thing you'll have to go to once you get to the event is what's called a driver's meeting. Most of them will have a timing trailer or a timing van, something where it's going to look official where they're doing the timing from, and probably where you'll do registration, and they'll make an announcement either through a PA or someone who has a very loud voice that they'll be having a driver's meeting. And at the driver's meeting, they'll go over the rules of the day, focusing, number one, on safety, where spectators can watch from, what to do if a car breaks down, what you do as a driver if a car breaks down. At this time also, they'll start recruiting volunteers to help work the course. Normally, the participants work themselves the course. So it's an all sense this is an all-volunteer effort. Everybody pitches in to make the event successful. And you'll be instructed, if you've never worked a course, either how to do it, or you'll be given someone who's done it before to work with you. And you'll be given a flag or two, a fire extinguisher, usually a two-way radio. And they'll instruct you how to communicate back to the timing trailer. They'll instruct you when to wave the flag to stop a car should there be an incident, or if a car spins and they don't want one car catching up to the other. How to call in when someone knocks down a cone, because that in itself is a two-second penalty. Mm-hmm. So you want to be accurate about which car knocked down which cone.
How many cars are on the track at once?
Normally it's one car, maybe two, depending on the size of the lot, depending on the course itself. Mm. And when they have two on, that's usually spread apart wide enough to where you'll never catch the other car. If it appears you're catching the other car, they'll usually flag you down and stop you and give you what's called a rerun, so you get to run again. But they do a pretty good job of spacing the cars, not have you run into another car or catch up to another car, rather. Some clubs call it solo because you're out there essentially by yourself versus a wheel-to-wheel racing where you're out there with other cars. Is all by yourself unless you have an instructor in a car, but as far as another car, essentially by yourself.
Are there standard layouts that you guys put together, or is it kind of you just bring
well, that's what... actually another neat thing about the autocrossing as opposed to driving on the track, which is a fixed course. Autocrossing, the course changes every event. So in that essence, it makes it a little bit more fair for everyone that you have to learn the course all over again, whether you're a veteran or a rookie. With that said, there's a lot of elements of a course that are utilized from one event to another, be it, like I said, a slalom. There's what's called a skid pad, which is essentially a big circle that the car will go around. Sometimes you go around it twice. Sometimes you enter it and come back and enter it in a different direction. But it's not uncommon to see a skid pad on an autocross course. And once you start doing these and going to more and more, you start recognizing the different elements. So when you walk the course, you can piece it together really quickly and really easily. You'll see the veterans pick up a course a lot quicker. And that actually translates to when you do go to the racetrack to do a driver's ed and you're going to a new track. Autocrossers tend to pick up the course much quicker than non-autocrossers, because in autocrossing, you've got only a few runs to memorize that course and get it down. So it's a nice exercise and practice to learn that carries over to other parts of motorsport, too.
As far as, like, regional, do you travel out of the region to catch a lot of them, or do you stay regional, or how do you work?
Personally, I stay regional. I'm lucky my the lot they use is 10 minutes from my house, so I'm very spoiled.
Oh, yeah.
But if you look not only just in PCA, but under the BMW Club, SCCA, NASA, you could probably autocross every single weekend in your area without too far of a drive if you wanted to. Which mm-hmm. a few years back, that's what I was doing almost on a weekly basis, sometimes one or two autocrosses in one day. Once again, for anywhere from $10, $15, $20, $40, it's not a bad thrill ride. One of the things that PCA has also done is called the Junior Participation Program. So if you have a son or daughter who's 16 or 17, they can come out and they can autocross as well. And more importantly, they can take what's called the autocross school, which is usually done by a lot of regions and usually done at the beginning of the year. They limit it to about maybe 40, 45 students, and they focus in on doing the basics of autocross. They teach you the basic techniques such as heel and toe, we call threshold braking, steering techniques, sitting positions. Sitting positions is one of the things I love to show people, because most folks are used to driving on the highway and you don't have the seat reclined back, mm-hmm. stretching your arms out, and here they teach you the proper way to sit in the car so you have full control, minimize fatigue. They teach you how to keep both hands on the steering wheel at all times, except when you're shifting. So there's these schools, if you look once again in your region website or newsletter, they're a great investment as far as learning how to car handles and learning about autocross. And it is open for the Junior Participation Program of PCA to 16, 17-year-olds. So where most kids who are getting their driver's license, the biggest challenge they have is parallel parking. This takes it to another level and teaches them about car handling dynamics, why a car does a certain thing. And it's an amazing learning tool. I know when my kids get up that age, I've already planned for them to take this autocross course so they understand a little bit about why to do certain things and not to do certain things
right.
in an accident avoidance situation.
Oh, yeah, that's huge.
And once again, the autocross is a very low-risk event done in an empty parking lot. The course is... If there's light poles, the course is designed way far away from the light poles. So once again, the worst thing you can do is hit a pylon, I think, and you may have to take out some wax to clean it off. But it's usually the pylon suffers more than your car does by far.
Right.
And they're meant to just fold over or bend over or get knocked over or whatnot. Or if you're really good, you don't hit any pylons.
What's turnout like at these events, Manny?
Depending on the region, they can get anywhere from 20, 25 cars to over 100. Yeah, it's a popular sport, and it's very addictive once people start doing it. I guess it's like golf. You know, you think you can do better and better, so you keep on going out as much as you can to improve your skill set. And once people see that you don't have to have a high horsepower, expensive car to do well, I think it encourages people to keep on coming out. At the last autocross we had a young guy in a Miata who drove really, really well, and he came in second place overall to a GT3. And the GT3 beat him by, I think, 0.4 of a second. So you figure 90,000 for a GT3 versus 4,000 or 5,000 for this used Miata. Mm-hmm. That was not a bad differential for 0.4 of a second.
Right.
And this kid, he drove this Miata very well. He got every ounce of horsepower he could at his little car. And it humbled quite a few drivers out there to see this little Miata doing so well out there.
Oh,
but
nice.
I've seen sedans out there, Cayennes. You know, it's not unusual to see a member bring Cayennes out there to autocross as well. There's a lot of resources on the Internet as well. A lot of forums about just simply about autocrossing, discussing different techniques, handling questions. Once people get there, you'll see one of the most popular appliances they have is tire pressure gauge. The tire pressure is very critical to how a car handles at an autocross. And usually people bring their own air pumps or air tanks, or maybe they'll have air at the autocross site. We tell students to put another 5 pounds of air into their tires, so it'll increase the stiffness of the sidewall, and you won't have much rollover on a stock car. But you can do a lot of tweaking of your car's handling just by adjusting tire pressure. And this is especially true if you're running those R-compound tires where you want to get into the sweet spot of where the tire operates the best. But as I mentioned before, other than a helmet or maybe a tire gauge, there's really no other special tools or equipment that you have to buy for your car. they have shoe polish. You put the number on your window, you're good to go. It's a neat event that the club offers to members, and it's great for new members to come out and see what their car is capable of doing. It's not uncommon for new members to get rides with their instructors, so they can see what it's like to see a Porsche driven well on an autocross course. And surprisingly, I always tell people, the drivers that do the best are the ones that make the least tire noise, and they're the smoothest. And if you're watching them, you don't think they're going that fast.
Right.
Because you're not hearing all this tire screeching or car going sideways. It's a very smooth, almost boring run. And then when you see the time, you're blown away by how quick they ran for the gate versus another car that might have been screeching and smoking tires and whatnot and got a terrible run time. So it's a sport that, like I said, rewards precision and smoothness.
I think we've covered most of the points here.
Good.
That's great.
Good.
All right, Manny, thank you.
All right, Anthony, thanks a lot.
All right.
All right, have a good one.
All right, bye-bye. Well, that's going to wrap up this edition of the PCA Podcast. Don't forget to tune into the many other editions we have available for you here at PCA.org.